Chapter 25. My Burglar Scene 1. Where do I fit in? There is no safe word. That's what she told him last night when he begged her to stop, that he had had enough. This is life, Robert. You can't just turn off life, the night angel said. You can't change your mind in midstream. Robert thought they had been playing a game. She had tied him up, then exhausted him. His arms were so sore from struggling through the night, he could barely pick up his coffee cup. Helpless at a girl's mercy while she sexually molested and frustrated him, making him wait until she decided when to finish him, had been a fantasy of Robert's, one that, until last night, had always remained a fantasy. That's how it started anyway, with his fantasy. But then Kelly changed it. His heart pounding out of his chest, his fast breathing, his body responding to every touch of the night angel, of Travis, oh, the shame. The continual stimulation aroused him, confused, and overwhelmed him. He did not like it. No, he did not like it one bit. It had humiliated him. It had repulsed him. It had inflamed him. And even now he felt a tingle in his penis when he thought of it. The unwilling victim of some male's perverted craving to restrain and sexually stimulate him, his bound body at first twisting and turning against the touches, disgusted by the very act of such intimate contact with another male. But eventually, the body responding, then even seeking the touches as the titillation continued. His mind resisted, ashamed of the body's weakness, of its betrayal. But reluctantly, inevitably, it yielded. His will giving way to the aroused body, then frantically joining with it in its frenzied eruption. He wasn't gay, all right? He was sure he was not. He knew guys who were gay. Some even posed nude in his college art classes. Some were friends. But he was not attracted to them, not in that way. Truthfully, they weren't attracted to him either, not in that way. He watched their relationships. As far as he could see, they weren't different from the various relationships of his straight friends. For either, straight or gay, some were pretty much just for sex, plain and simple. The Travises of the world, the one-night whizzes, the pick-em-up, and be-dem-down players. Others were more than that. There was caring for the other person. Affection. Each becoming vulnerable to the other. An intimacy. The ability to love the other more than anyone else. The power to hurt more too. Gay, straight, looking for a one-night stand, or a longer-term commitment, they all started the same. There was the initial sizing up. You see someone across a room, their demeanor, how they hold themselves, something attracts you to that particular person. There is a spark. Even here, Robert thought, at the first stage of intimacy, the difference between gay and straight started. He was not drawn to guys. For him, there was no spark. Then did the other person show interest? Did they look back? In a room full of people, are you alone together? You talk. At first, mundane and superficial. But if each finds an attraction to the other, the courtship begins. They hold hands, that first touch of intimacy. Then closer, arms around a shoulder, then around the waist as familiarity and comfort grow. Then the first kiss. The couple have become vulnerable to each other. The kisses get more intense, more intimate. Tongues are used, they exchange a part of each other. Fingers run through the other's hair, hands cradle face, then move around to other regions. Clothing is removed, it speeds up now. The man kisses the woman's breasts. Is it that way for a gay couple? Robert thought so. He knew his nipples responded to touch. Then hands on the other's genitals, exciting them. Then. Yes. Then. Yes, sex is an essential part. But so is romance, the intimate sharing, and caring for another person. The commitment to be involved. The ins and outs, the jealousies, the comings and goings of human relationships seemed pretty universal, whether straight or gay. He wasn't gay. He was pretty sure about that. Straight, gay, it seemed to him, were at opposite ends of a pole. The extreme opposites of each other. Still? Sometimes? He wondered. He got out his art pad and a pencil and sketched a pole, his most clear thoughts came about when he sketched things out. He labeled it the human sexuality chart. After all, sex, that's what it's all about, isn't it? Then thought, and added, who am I? Lots of question marks, lots of questions. Let's start with the most basic. What are you? Male, female. Fundamental. It's what we are at birth. Certainly opposites on the pole. He labeled the ends. How do you think of yourself? Man, woman. Yeah. Opposites, for him. He labeled those on the pole, above the male female labels. How about traits? He added some below the pole. Dominate, submissive. Logical, emotional. Aggressive, passive. Could he add more labels? Yes, there are many more. Wants sex, wants relationship. Stoic, feeling. Strong, soft. Scientist, artist. The ends of the pole were getting crowded. At first, when trying to list the traits, he thought it would be simplest to list one as it applied to one end of the pole and then look up in a dictionary its antonym, a word opposite in meaning for the other end. But that didn't always work. The antonym seemed to have negative connotations. The antonym for focused, for instance, was scattered. Did that mean scattered-brained? But that did not fairly describe someone who was not focused, whose mind could encompass and consider many possibilities. Open-minded, broad-minded, observant, flexible were the more positive traits. Competitive at one end of the pole did not mean apathetic worked at the other end, accommodating encompassed the different trait better. That a person was vulnerable did not mean the other was guarded, it could mean they were protective. He decided the ends of the poles were not opposites of each other, not black-white. That one end of the pole was positive did not mean the other end was negative, it meant it was different. He added more labels. Focused, open-minded. Bold, polite. Protective, vulnerable. Competitive, accommodating. How about, who are you attracted to? Opposite sex, same sex. He put that at the top of the pole with his male, female and man, woman, labels. Robert paused with his labeling. Who do you want to have sex with? Well, that was a question, wasn't it? Opposite sex, same sex. Really, the opposite sex for him. All the time. All the time. All the time, except for the dominated against his will by a male fantasy. This question went above the who are you attracted to? Label? Then he got to his real question. So, what are you, straight or gay? Come clean now. Straight, gay. He put those labels above the others. But it didn't help answer his question of who he was. The rigidity of the pole, east, west, black, white, yes, no, each trait having a fixed position at one end or the other, did not fit with what he felt he was. There was some sense he was not at the extreme of the straight end of the pole, but more at that end than the other. Was it rationalization? Perhaps. But he now thought his pole, with its set conclusions, not so reliable. He did another chart. New question, where do I fit in? This time not emphasizing the dichotomy of the labels, but where the pair of them fit along the continuum between male and female. This gave him more flexibility. His dominate-submissive trait was clearly more toward the female side. And, after his college experience, he knew he was more artist than scientist. He felt warm that his protective-vulnerable trait leaned toward the male side, and somewhat confused, but satisfied enough, where he placed his wants-sex-wants-relationship trait. But when he was done, his plotting showed another problem. The sex questions above the pole, how do you think of yourself? Who are you attracted to? Who do you want to have sex with? So, what are you, straight or gay? Were clearly, and he believed, for him, rightly so at the male end of the pole. While most of the traits leaned toward the female side. Something's really wrong here. No wonder he felt screwed up most of the time. Jerk Travis would have this a lot easier. Robert laughed. Jerk's chart would be so lopsided to the left it would tip over. He tried again. The problem, he decided, was the stereotypes of what it means to be male or female. Let's throw them out with the rigid pole that goes along with them. Perhaps human personality is not a monograph written on a stone tablet. It is a lyric written on a sheet of music. And the traits, the traits. The traits are our notes, notes that could be placed in a myriad of rhythms, playing infinite melodies for each person. The arrangement of the notes at any given time based on inclination, situation, and luck. Robert remade his sketch. New title, A Human Song. The pole now not a rod but a musical staff. He remade his labels too, the traits no longer in horizontal dichotomy but in vertical harmony. No longer static, they now slid along the staff, playing the rhythms and beats that was his music. It was messy, jumbled, and disorganized. There were discordant notes, and blaring sounds, and mistakes, and not everything played well together, but sometimes it sounded like an au-pair, and then it was all gloriously human. He knew how he placed himself was subjective, but he was comfortable where he was. He wondered how Kelly would arrange his notes. Did she now see him as some weak boy toy? He wanted more than that with her. He was her man. Damn it. When he was a boy in grade school, he tried to show off for a girl he was smitten with. He had climbed to the top of the playground swing set. See how strong and brave a man I am. The girl climbed up and hung upside down from her knees. Bob was afraid to do that. Proving manliness was not always easy, nor safe. One of the rules of the Night Angel game was they couldn't talk about it outside of the bedroom. He would wait until she came to him. Then he would show her his sketch, and if he felt really brave, ask her how she would place his notes. The other rule of the Night Angel game became more challenging, you have to wait for me. Only I can satisfy you. During the days while posing, Kelly was more sensual than Robert ever remembered. Warm, soft, compliant, unusual for her, he thought, a breathlessness in her voice. The aroma of her lotion filled the studio and Robert's head. Occasionally, when not posing, she would stand behind him, watching him paint, her hair brushing his neck, her mouth so close to him he felt her breath on his ear, her breasts pressed against his arm. At those times, Robert could hardly work. He waited for her hand to reach around him, touch him, and promise tonight. It never did. Kelly was very much enjoying the game. At the end of the day she would come close, look up and kiss him, her tongue thrusting into his mouth, her hands reaching up and playing with his hair. Robert's arms would go around Kelly, pulling her to him, his hands molding, squeezing her naked rear. He would grow against her. She must feel his need. But then she would sigh, pull away, get dressed, and leave. Nights became too dangerous for bed. He had tried that the first night. He touched himself, only a little. What could it hurt? The touching went to stroking, his fingers moving up and down his growing cock. Just a little more. He stopped and got out of bed. He half expected Kelly to walk in just as he started coming. She would watch him finishing himself off, and then she would be finished with him. Cold showers are overrated, although that didn't stop Robert from trying. Mornings found him groggily slumped over the table by the window. Robert's emotions swept from love so intense he almost cried to searing resentment that she would keep him in such misery. He did a drawing of Kelly and him and titled it Naked in the Jungle, Sheila and Her Puppet. The rules of the Night Angel game were in play, the promises kept. Why did he keep them? He wondered about the control she now had over him, even to what he could do with his body. He hated it. Yet he waited. Each day his frustration increasing. Thoughts of sex now not every few hours, as he had read in a recent study, not even the street knowledge of every 10 minutes. It was pretty much all the time. Focusing on his work was not in the cards. Unfocused driving was something he could do. Toward the end of the week, he left the estate to take some of his artwork to the porn shop in the city. This would be his last trip. The months he owed Sam were over. He was now free to leave, and leave he was going to do. Leave Sam, leave the porn, leave Kelly and her crazy games. Yes. Even Kelly. He was out of here. His phone rang. It was Kelly on FaceTime. Scene 2. Rescue me. I want you. What are you talking about? I showered, Put on some of our lotion. I'm ready for you to make love to me.
Ah.
Oh. Okay. Kelly, remember I'm driving into the city. I won't be home for a few hours.
Robert, I want you now.
I heard you.
I can't now.
Watch. Kelly put her phone on a selfie stick she had fixed to the foot of her bed. Robert could see her sitting in the middle of the bed.
Do you see I'm naked?
I'm naked for you, Robert. She bent over. Her image went out of the screen. Robert was trying to keep his eyes on the road as well as the screen on his phone.
Kelly, what are you doing?
Kelly came back into view. I just tied my feet to the corners of the bed.
Kelly laid back.
She had a pair of handcuffs and cuffed her hands to the bed frame above her head.
Robert, I'm fixed down now.
I can't get free. Do you see the key on the chain between my breasts?
I can't reach it.
You need to come and get it.
What about Sam and Elaine?
They're gone until tomorrow, so's the housekeeper.
I'm here alone.
Kelly, that's dumb.
What if there's an emergency, a fire, or something?
A burglar?
Kelly suggested.
I'll get there as soon as I can.
Don't hang up, Robert, keep me with you.
Listen to me. I don't want to be a virgin to you anymore, celibate without the balance of the sensual. Hygienic and sterile without connection to the flesh.
Robert, tell me you love me, while making love to me, feel me shuddering as I climax in your arms, holding nothing back, surrendering everything to you.
No one's ever given that to me, never allowed me to have that, to complete me.
Robert, complete me.
My legs are spread out, my feet tied down, I'm exposed and vulnerable.
Robert, this is so frustrating.
I'm aching inside.
Please hurry.
Kelly twisted her wrists in the handcuffs.
Robert, I'm afraid.
Where are you?
Robert, I can feel the key laying between my breasts.
If I could just reach it, I could free myself.
Kelly jerked at the handcuffs, shaking the bed frame.
Shit. I really did it this time.
I can't get loose.
Kelly's face showed surprise.
Robert, I hear a noise downstairs.
Someone is coming into the house.
I think it's a burglar.
Oh, I hope he stays downstairs.
Someone is coming up the stairs, Kelly whispered.
Please, please don't come in here.
I hear the doorknob turning.
The door is opening.
No.
He's coming into my room.
Who are you?
Why are you here?
Please, Mr. Burglar, just leave.
He's getting onto my bed.
No.
Go away.
Please don't.
Please don't touch me.
Oh, Robert, his hands are on me, fondling my breasts, his fingers flicking my nipples, making them hard.
My hands grasp the bed frame.
I can't resist.
My head moves back, exposing my neck like an animal submitting.
He's biting my neck, licking and kissing my breasts, sucking my nipples, his hand travels down me, down my stomach.
Oh, God.
No.
Not there.
I jerk, then start panting as his fingers manipulate me.
I'm not going to come for you.
Why did I put that lotion on?
Pinching, petting, caressing, I'm whimpering.
No, please.
Stop.
Fingers softly teasing me, I'm responding.
Don't.
Stop.
I'm losing focus.
I can't tell.
His mouth replaces his fingers, licking, nibbling, tasting me.
His tongue is lashing me like he's in a feeding frenzy.
I'm thrashing about in surrender.
I can't help it.
I climax, plunging into devouring, screaming madness.
Now it's his turn.
I know that.
I open my mouth.
No.
Please don't.
He covers it with his hand as he enters me.
Then there are just the muffled sounds of my moaning until my head rocks back, and I cry as I abandon myself to him again.
He's waited for me.
Now he thrusts into me, ramming me with his passion, my body bouncing up and down as he lunges, the bed going crazy, squeaking and creaking.
His head digs into my neck.
Don't come in me.
He grunts and fills me.
Robert rested a moment, then carefully lifted himself off Kelly and laid by her side. He tried to kiss her, but she turned her head. "Kelly, what's wrong? Please untie me. Kelly, what's wrong? Are you mad?" I said, "Untie me." We were playing a game, the burglar game. "That's what you wanted." Kelly glared at Robert. "I wanted you to rescue me, not fuck me." Chapter 26. How much do you love me? Shit. 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 Robert was struggling to wake up with a cup of coffee. He had not slept well. He had played, rewound, and replayed the events of yesterday most of the night. Sometimes he would play the entire day, from when he got up, driving to the gallery, Kelly's call, she had called him. Right? She wanted him, she said. The burglar, what was that all about? The burglar raped her, no, not rape, not really, he wanted her, so he took her, dominated and ravished her. That was Kelly's fantasy, that was what she wanted, okay? So when does consent become rape? The night angel kept tormenting him even as he begged her to stop. Shit. Most of the time, he replayed the part where Kelly was lying naked on her bed, her arms bound above her head. And that key, that damn key resting between her breasts. He watched it rising and falling with her breathing. He picked it up with his lips and slipped it into her mouth. Their tongues clowned with it, shared and played with it. Kelly giggled when the soaked key slid down her cheek. Then he was inside her. He felt strong as she wriggled and struggled under him, powerful as she whimpered and moaned. No, she breathed as her hips moved up and down on him. He was so close. Her heat enclosed him and held him. She had brought him to a sexual high with her night angel game, and for a week, had maddeningly kept him there. Her body hardened as it prepared for orgasm, her soft breasts pressed on his chest. Don't come in me. Her hips thrust up to her climax. Robert's hands gripped the bedsheets, his head buried into her neck, his hips pumped, he cried and came too. It was all part of the game. Right? Shit. How did I screw it up? No way that was rape. He had bragged earlier, took a self-righteous vow he would, could never do that. Damn, Kelly. Damn. Damn. Shit. Kelly walked in. Short skirt, long legs, she's barefoot, her hair, she's cut her hair. Short, like a boy's. Short hair could have been all right, delicate, framing her face, which sometimes, he thought, looked like she was 16. But this crazy mess, a chop here, a chop there. Who did this? And all hacked, hacked, hacked into such a tangle of angry angles. Kelly pulled the door shut, then paced like a trapped animal back and forth in front of it. Robert had wanted to talk to her, to work out what happened between them, but he wasn't ready. Not yet. He needed to replay the movie a few more times. Kelly barging in didn't give him that. He didn't think now was a good time to ask about her hair. Are you still mad at me? Kelly marched to the kitchen cabinet, took out a glass, and slammed the door. Robert was stumbling for something to say. I'm not sure what happened yesterday. I thought you wanted that. We were playing a game. Kelly didn't respond and took a drink of water, spilling some of it when she set the glass hard on the cabinet. It was just like what you told me. You know, about the burglar. Kelly stood, looking at the glass and spilled water. He would tie you up and make love to you. Kelly glared at Robert. He would rescue me. Yeah, I know. He'd protect you, and make love to you, and take you away from here. Kelly, I want to do that. Take care of you. Kelly was quiet. Kelly, please. What is it? Kelly looked down and folded her arms across her chest as if to keep it from flying apart. She took a deep breath. Sam is going to kill me. It was said so quietly, Robert thought he had not heard. His processing of those sounds was similar to when Kelly told him Travis had raped her. The sounds came through his ears and swirled around in his head for a while but never settled in any meaningful place. Then they dove deep into his brain. His response this time wasn't any more helpful than then. What? What did you say? Kelly looked up at Robert. louder and more forceful this time. I said, "Sam is going to kill me." Kelly gave a little shrug and peered toward the door. "Probably this weekend." Those sounds found a place, but with no more meaning than the others. "That's crazy. What are you talking about?" Kelly, her head down, shuffled toward Robert. "Remember, I told you they were trying to convince my friends and family I was suicidal?" Kelly glanced at Robert. "You even helped them with that when you called the police on me." She put her head back down. "Now I know why. They left for the cottage yesterday for the weekend. They're setting up an alibi for when I'm killed and make it look like a suicide." There were so many more sounds coming in than Robert could process. He stood as Kelly continued. "Elaine was drinking yesterday." "Okay, she's always drinking, I guess drinking too much, well." Kelly, still looking down, moved closer to Robert. He could smell the shampoo she used after cutting her hair. "Well, she left some papers on her desk. I was never supposed to see them. I was searching for something this morning in her room and found it."
"Found what?"
"A life insurance policy, on my life, for $1 million.
"Okay.
So?"
"So what?"
"It was taken out 2 years ago."
"2 years ago, today."
Robert put his hands on Kelly's shoulders. "I'm still not following. Travis said life insurance wouldn't pay off if the person insured commits suicide within the first 2 years."
Robert gripped Kelly. "Travis? You talked to Travis? Why are you talking to Travis?
You said he raped you. Why do you have anything to do with him?"
Kelly shook away from Robert and stepped back. "He's in pre-law. I needed to learn about this. Anyway, we stay in touch. I can't believe you're still talking to him."
Kelly went into her defensive position, arms crossed, feet planted firmly apart.
"That's not important. Will you listen to what I'm saying? That policy was taken out 2 years ago. If I'm found dead, they get the money.
You're saying your parents are going to kill you for a life insurance policy?
Now you're getting it, pal."
Robert also assumed the position. "Okay.
All right. Let's talk about that. But then we're going to get back to Travis."
Kelly looked away and shrugged.
"Listen, if they were going to kill you for insurance money, they didn't need to wait 2 years. They could have had someone kill you when they took out the policy and make it look like it was a—"
Robert stumbled on the word, "burglar. Or something."
Kelly looked back at Robert.
"They wouldn't want it to look like murder?
That would mean serious police investigation.
Sam wouldn't want the cops anywhere near that close."
"No. They need it to look like a suicide. There would be police involvement, but limited and apologetic.
We are sorry for your loss, Mr. and Mrs. Gallo. We're sorry to bother you at a time like this.
Suicide allows the family a muted repose for their shame while I quietly disappear.
Kelly, I'm having trouble with all this. Sam's wealthy, $1 million's a lot, but enough to kill you for it?
Sam's not so wealthy.
Not really.
There's a lot of show.
Well, it's a pretty good show.
Sam's always cash poor.
Elaine spends like crazy for appearances, and so does Sam. He and Elaine argue about it a lot. He's always overextended.
And when he's overextended, it's to people you don't want to be overextended to.
Okay.
Sam.
I can almost see he could kill you, but you think your mother is in on it?
Kelly snorted.
My mother. My mother never wanted me.
What's so sacred about motherhood?
Kelly looked at Robert. What about yours?
They took that policy out 2 years ago and then just had to sit back and wait.
Maybe that's why she's been drinking more lately. She knows that the waiting time is over.
I'm reeling here. I can't think.
This is crazy.
You think they've been planning this for 2 years?
What kind of people have a 2-year plan to kill someone?
That's Machiavellian.
What's Machiavellian?
You don't know who Machiavelli was?
Why do you always think you're so much smarter than me?
I don't know about your Don Quixote, I don't know, nor care about your glacier coming at us from Canada, and I don't know about Machiavelli.
It sounds like something baked in red sauce that I'd order at an Italian restaurant.
But I know Sam. He will manipulate,
He will lie, he will.
I guess you about got Machiavelli, Kelly. I can't blame him, that's what everyone does.
Right?
You'd make a great politician, but I don't think everyone.
I can't blame him, but I'm not going to let him kill me either.
I invited some girlfriends over for a sleepover and told them to bring their boyfriends. That protects me tonight, but I can't do that forever. Eventually, I'll be alone.
That insurance policy is my death warrant, and Sam is about to have it served.
Unless... Kelly moved closer to Robert.
Robert, it's a race. They have to be killed first.
Wait a minute, what are you saying?
They're at the cottage for their alibi.
But it's also a good place where they can be killed.
Kelly, I can't believe you're thinking this.
Call the police.
And tell them what?
My suspicions?
There's no evidence.
And I've already got a reputation as someone who's mental.
They wouldn't believe me.
Besides, Sam has connections all over the place. I can't risk it getting back to him that I found out what he's up to.
I can't be a part of this.
You didn't protect me when Travis raped me.
You didn't avenge me.
You need to do something now.
When that damn Travis raped you?
Travis didn't rape you.
You made the whole thing up.
Kelly slapped him.
We talked about that.
I thought you believed me.
You said you were sorry I was raped.
Are you taking that back?
Robert rubbed his cheek.
He'd never been slapped before, and it stung like hell.
Tears formed in his eyes.
He wiped them away with the back of his hand.
You're still talking to him.
Kelly glared at Robert.
You raped me, and I'm still talking to you.
It wasn't like that.
It was exactly like that.
Kelly, we were playing a game, another one of your games, the burglar game.
That wasn't a game.
Oh.
Okay.
Robert threw up his arms.
Mea culpa. Mea culpa, mea maxima.
So go and sin no more.
But you still owe me.
You fucked your old girlfriend, Ariana.
You fucked my best friend, Sydney.
You fucked my mother.
And now you've fucked me.
You like to sit back and watch everyone and judge them.
You never do anything.
You couldn't even commit suicide.
You're a loser.
You said you'd kill for me?
That was part of a game. The Night Angel game.
You promised.
Kelly, that was in a moment of passion.
People shouldn't say something they don't mean.
And what about you?
You told me you didn't know Sydney, and now you just said she's your best friend?
Kelly turned and went to the door.
Robert guessed she was leaving.
Instead, she stood and gazed out its window.
A small bird flew down onto the patio, picked at something, then saw it was being watched and flew off.
Aren't I worthy of being loved?
Kelly's fingers traced tiny circles around the window frame.
Can't someone love me?
Kelly, I'm sorry. I'm just struggling to get my head around this.
We're two lost souls, Robert.
In one way or another, our parents left us.
No one wants us.
This is crazy.
You tell me Sam and your mother are about to kill you.
That it might even be this weekend.
That you can't go to the police for.
We only have each other.
That you want me to help you kill them.
Kelly turned and walked up to Robert.
No, not help me kill them.
I'd be a suspect for sure.
You.
You have to kill them.
My friends will be my alibi.
They and their boyfriends.
They'll be able to say I was home all night.
I'll invite Travis.
Travis?
Why him?
Because he'll be more than happy to testify that he kept me in bed squealing all night.
Robert's world was unraveling like a roll of toilet paper.
I could be a suspect too.
You stay here and fix us dinner and be the bartender, then go do it after everyone goes to bed.
In the morning, make us breakfast.
It will look like you were around all night.
If anyone ever asks, just say you went to your place after dinner and stayed there all night.
Robert was looking down and didn't respond.
Did you hear me?
If anyone asks you, say you were at your house all night.
Understand?
Yes.
What are you going to say?
That I was home all night.
Robert, when this is finished, you'll stay here, free, you can travel, paint, Do nothing. I don't care about any of that.
You'll live with me, Robert. At night we'll drink wine, and watch silly TV shows, and make love, and in the mornings you'll wake up in my arms. Freedom is not a very admirable accomplishment when it has left you adrift. Let it go. Let it go, Robert. I'm your lifeline. Take hold of me. Love me, and I'll be your lifetime playmate.
Robert, there's a terrible thing coming for me.
You can stop it.
I'm afraid, Robert.
Kelly took Robert's hands and placed them over her heart, pressing them into the softness of her breasts.
Robert, rescue me.
He had wanted to capture souls in his paintings, and now she took his.
Kelly.
She looked up at him.
Do you love me?
You know I do.
How much?
I'd do anything for you.
I'd die for you.
But will you kill for me?
Chapter 27. Murder.
Scene 1. The sea rushes in.
He could no more stand against her than as against an ocean wave rushing to shore.
She washed his sense of who he was from underneath his feet, pushed him over, and pulled him out to sea.
Janie, the burglar, the night angel, the dreams were now in control, and as in a dream, Robert heard Kelly's voice instructing him what to do.
Take Willow West to where it hits 294. Then go south to the Jane Addams.
Why can't I take 294 north?
Isn't that faster?
You'll get lost.
Go the way we went this summer.
Just follow my directions, and it will be okay.
Take your cell phone with you in case you have any questions.
Traffic was light through the northern Chicago neighborhoods.
Only bars were open this close to midnight.
The bar where he and Manny met was a couple miles south of here.
I wonder if Manny's there now?
What would he say about this?
Hey, kid, would this make a great story or what?
What?
The thought struck Robert, making his heart hurt.
What about this?
It was better not to think about the what.
Will you kill for me?
He had not answered her.
Not directly.
But here he was, late at night, driving to his rendezvous with the Gallos.
What the hell am I doing?
This is crazy.
No.
This is murder.
Why floated somewhere near the top of his head?
Kelly's life was at stake.
That was the why.
She had told him so.
Can you believe it?
Her parents were going to kill her.
How wretched a child for her parents to have her executed.
Why justified the what, the cause celebre?
He is the knight in shining armor rescuing his damsel.
At the moment, why seemed the least important?
How is what he focused on?
How to dress.
Be sure and wear dark clothing.
How to get in his jeep, how to start it, how to get to the toll road.
How was not so bad.
Just follow the how, step by step.
The routine, the mundane, the how, that is where sanity lay.
Take the toll road like we did this summer.
The toll road rushed him north, the city and suburbs fell behind him.
For a while, he could see the lights in his rearview mirror, then all was dark.
He focused on the how.
How to follow the markings on the road his headlights illuminated.
How to stop and pay at a toll booth.
Did he look suspicious?
How to stay on the road and not veer into the pillars of an overpass.
What would have taken him smashing into one?
How got him into Wisconsin?
He drove past distant farmhouses, dark except for a porch light and a light on the barn showing their whereabouts.
People tucked in their beds.
A house nearer, a light still on.
Getting ready for bed?
Getting up for work already?
This was farmland, after all.
Going to the bathroom?
Oh, to be doing the simple things.
I'm sorry, Kelly had said as he was leaving.
Sorry for what?
He wondered.
We're all sorry.
Sorry for what we've done.
Sorry as we helplessly watch the effect of our actions reverberate through our lives, creating hurt we did not intend.
Sorry as a boy shoots his BB gun and wishes he could call the pellet back before it strikes the sparrow.
And sorry, yes, sorry for what we are about to do.
Ariana had been with him at his father's funeral.
She sat next to him during the church service and stood with her arm around his at the gravesite.
A woman was standing on the other side of the casket.
She must have glanced at him.
Who's that? Ariana whispered. That's my mother. After the priest blessed the dead, family and friends came to him to express their condolences. His mother was not one of them. He saw Ariana had slipped away and was talking with her. Later, on the way to the car, he asked why she did that. She's your mother. I wanted to make her feel welcomed.
You shouldn't have.
She's not welcomed. I invited her to the house for the get-together.
You had no right to do that.
Why didn't you check with me first?
I'm sorry.
It seemed like the polite thing to do.
You don't know what you're doing.
Well, anyway, she declined.
You need to stay out of my business.
It was the couple's first fight. At the house, Ariana was the perfect hostess. She introduced herself to the people who had gathered there, brought around trays of sandwiches and snacks, and made sure everyone found the bar. After everyone left, they lay on his bed. Before, his father had always been in the house. Now, it was just the two of them. He never felt more exhausted, or alone. They didn't make love that night. He fell asleep with Ariana holding him in her arms. It ended badly between them. He had ended it badly. His father's finances had not been good. He had to sell the house and furnishings. 3 months, it didn't take long. The last day, after it was done, the final bits and pieces moved out or thrown away, he stood in the vacant house. He had told Ariana he was going to clean up the place before the buyers took over in the morning. Ariana offered to help, but he told her he would handle it himself. The house didn't need cleaning. He just needed to be alone. It was the only home he could remember, and he wanted to say goodbye. Here was where he grew up. In this dining room is where the picture had been taken, the Christmas one, when the three of them were still together, and his ears were red from the excitement. Over there, in the corner, is where the rocking chair had sat. His mother would take it out onto the patio and rock him in that chair when they looked at the stars. He had it taken to a landfill. Here was his bedroom. The furniture had stayed the same through the years, only the decorations changed as he grew up. Posters of bunny rabbits and unicorns gave way to Star Wars and Spider-Man, which gave way to Einstein, Sagan, and the universe. There is where his father sat, watching television, drinking his life away. And on that porch, right over there, the image that would be forever in his mind, is where he had found his father. That was his father's spot. He had found a photo album his mother had put together. It showed her as a baby, her childhood, her going to school, friends, and family, then dating and marriage to his father, then his birth. She had labeled each photo with where, when, and who was in it. A pictorial history of his mother, who she was, her dreams, all she hoped to be. It was her gift to him. He threw it in the dumpster. He left the house with nothing more than what he could pack in his Jeep. He realized he had nowhere to stay and nowhere to go. Nowhere was just fine and dandy. Nowhere expected nothing from him. Nowhere was what he wanted. Nowhere was a cocoon he could crawl into and hide. He met Ariana at the bandstand in the park. They sat quietly for a while. He was rubbing his thumb and forefinger together like they were in a circular death race with each other. Ariana saw and was distressed.
Oh, please.
I don't understand.
Do you have to go?
Tears formed in her eyes.
Why can't I go with you?
He became angry.
He didn't look at her.
Will you call me?
I'll call you.
And her lip. That damn trembling lip. Then he walked away. Robert rolled down the window of his Jeep, put his head out to feel the wind's blast, and yelled. Ariana? Cried out the window into the dark Wisconsin countryside, I'm sorry. Screamed into the night until his throat was as raw as his soul, forgive me.
Forgive me.
Forgive me. Then turn onto Interstate 43. The exit sign pointed to Milwaukee. Robert thought maybe he would like to go to Milwaukee, but he followed Kelly's instructions instead. A turnoff from the interstate onto a state highway, then a county road. Watch out for the meteorite. The pull-off area appeared in his headlights. He parked at the same place as this summer. The woods were black in front of him. He edged toward where he hoped the path began and stumbled on a rock, fell, and caught himself with his right arm. His hand hit the ground, scraping and spraining his wrist. It was during the day when he and Kelly had come here. The path was visible then, now the dark forest concealed it. He jumped as a spider's web crackled across his face, instinctively flaying at it, trying to pull the sticky thing off. Do spiders stay attached to their webs? He thought of something he had read about spiders. If they ate human flesh, they would devour the human race within a year. Robert stared into the black forest, and the unblinking eyes of a spider-eating stared back. How had gotten him here, but how was gone, the forest ate it. Where was everything and everywhere? Where was this hostile, dark forest? Where was the scurrying and slithering creatures frantically hunting on its floor? Finding something to kill tonight would be their only chance to eat. Where was the stagnant, heavy air that covered him in sweat, saturated his lungs, making even breathing difficult? Where was the clamor of the crickets, katydids, and mosquitoes that shrouded all other sounds? Where was the rocks, stumps, and bushes that reached out and tripped him? God answers prayer. Oh, does he now? Then take away this burden. God answers prayer. So tell me true, is there no child that dies despite its mother's fervent prayer it live? Is there no grandmother who endures a long, painful death who prays to be taken peacefully home? God answers prayer. Whose prayer? The gazelle prays to outrun the lion to save the fetus in its womb. The lion prays to catch the gazelle to feed its starving cubs. And the hot wind blows and passes over, and the earth sighs and turns another day. This where is not where Robert wanted to be. In the summer, he and Kelly climbed this ancient hill. The hill formed by the Laurentide ice sheet. He told the uninterested Kelly about the animals that had roamed here, lived here, and are no more. The great beasts of the Ice Age had hunted and killed here, as had the creatures before them and the creatures after them. And so it has always been in this terrible slaughterhouse of survival, the hunter and the hunted. Kill or be killed. Eat or be eaten. And so it shall always be. The hunters are hunted, the killers are killed, those that eat are eaten. Forever and forever, world without end. Amen. Legs aching, lungs wheezing, heart thumping in his head. Hunted Robert climbed the hill, and the primeval beast trailed after him. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Oh, shit, now that one's a problem for you. But the commandment said nothing against immorality. There isn't any commandment against immorality. Except for that one slip-up, and except for now, he would have been okay. Except Christ didn't make that any easier. But I say unto you, that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. Just looking? How did they expect you to follow that one? I've been looking since I was 13. We are always in sin. Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned, I looked with lust on a young girl. Very well, my son. For your penance, say one rosary and go and sin no more. When leaving the church, a girl in a short skirt was coming in. Og, run back in to make another confession. When leaving the confessional, the girl was kneeling, saying her prayers, her legs, she's removed her shoes, her bare feet. Og, run back in for another confession. Did he ever leave the church? No, he never left the church. And his fate is still unlearned. The tune played through his mind. Robert chuckled. He held his hand against his mouth as more snorts escaped. He never got out. Robert doubled over in laughter, holding it in with both hands over his mouth. It's not that funny. His breath blasted through his closed fingers. He sank to the ground on his knees, bent over in muffled hysterical laughter. Tears ran down his cheeks, snot out his nose. His body shaking in its struggle to contain itself. It just plain hurt. Stop it. Stop it. Someone will hear. I'll be found out. He pounded his sprained fist against the forest floor. Get serious. If thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out, and cast it from thee. He stopped laughing. One-eyed Robert climbed the hill, and his sins bore with him. Sweat ran down his face, mosquitoes bit him, he felt cold and clammy. Fear tightened his stomach. He was about to throw up. Tree stumps glared at him in the moonlight, witnesses to the sin he was about to commit. A killer comes this way, they say. Two blue-eyed angels will come to your grave and ask three questions. If you answer correctly, they will carry you in their arms to heaven. Answer wrong, and they will drag you into hell. What are the answers?
Depends.
Depends can get you hell. What are the answers?
Depends.
Depends on what you are. For a Jew, God, Torah, Moses. For a Christian, Lord, New Testament, Jesus. For a Muslim, Allah, Quran, Muhammad. Take your pick, but probably don't mix and match. What if you're none of the above? Then be lucky. Lucky Robert climbed the hill, and the angels went after him. He climbed the hill, the beasts, his sins, and the death angels pacing him. Don't you know who I am? He asked.
Yes, we know you.
Your mother left you, and your father killed himself. Is that who you are?
Yes, that's who I am.
Forsaken Robert reached the cottage door, crossed himself, and hoped to die.
Scene 2. How do you kill someone with a knife?
Robert shivered when he entered the cottage. The air conditioning was turned on full. He had been sweating in the dank, humid forest, now his wet shirt stole the heat from him. His footsteps echoed as he made his way through the house. It was dark, only a little moonlight filtered through the windows. His shoes squeaked as he felt his way across the room. He thudded into a table, the sound ricocheting throughout the cottage. He stopped to hear if he had woken anyone. All was quiet except for his own breathing and the beating of his heart in his head. He continued to the kitchen. Use the one you used this summer to cut the limes. He remembered where the drawer was and opened it. It was too dark to see inside. Robert fumbled around, cringing as his sprained hand bumped into the objects inside. The sounds of his rummaging were enough to waken Limestone from the shadows and send the beast tearing for his throat. Tears in his eyes.
There's no knife.
How can I do this?
You can't.
Give it up. I can't find the knife she wants me to use. Time to leave. Failure was all about him.
No.
He felt for and picked up a large one. Robert remembered how to get to the master bedroom. Kelly had been careful to show him the way. He dreaded the thought. It was at the top of the dark stairs. To the top, to the top, to the top, 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 to the top, to the top, to the top, top. Sam was at the top. The stairs creaked with each step he took, sounding like nails being pulled out of wood planks. Then a thump, thump, thump from the top of the stairs. He looked up and saw the dark form of Limestone, risen from the grave to defend his old master, no doubt, no doubt. Robert caught his breath. The thing did not move. You'll take me back to the grave with you, no doubt, no doubt, no doubt. Robert took a step, the stair creaked, and the form turned into a chair. He entered the room. Moonlight was streaming in, washing the furniture a pale blue and leaving dark shadows in the corners. He was breathing hard. He saw them and held his breath. Their only movement was the slow, steady inhaling and exhaling as of deep sleep. Soon it would be over. He went to the bed, looked at them for a moment, then raised his knife. Kelly had directed everything, what to wear, how to get to the cottage, the code for the alarm, even the knife to use. But she had not told him about this. She had not told him how to kill someone with that knife. Robert lowered his arm.
Do you stab at them?
What if that doesn't work right away? How many times do you have to keep at it, keep sticking them until they give it up? How about slitting their throats? Is that faster? Could he pull back the cover, expose Sam's neck, and make the slash? Would Sam wake up and fight him? Sam was strong. Sam could take the knife from him. He was watching himself from the ceiling. So this is what murder looks like. How had gone away. Every bit of what he was about to do broke over him. There was no more time. When is here? Robert brought up the knife. Elaine rolled over. Robert startled.
Shit.
Her right arm dropped onto Sam's chest, patted him a couple of times, then she rolled back, her body settling into the bed, back into the deep sleep that was to be her last. He was not sure, but Sam may have nudged a little closer to his wife. Sam's breathing was still deep. Robert had enough reason to be angry with Gallo. He certainly detested the man. But what he needed was more than anger, an emotion he could sometimes control, he had even used at times. He had anger to acquiesce to Kelly's plan. Yes. Anger to drive through the dark night and climb the hill to the cottage. Yes. Anger to take a knife to Gallo's bed. Yes. Anger to murder. No. Anger was not enough. It took more than anger, even more than hatred. It took rage. Anger, hate, then rage. Robert sought for that, but it was not in him. He turned to leave and saw himself in the mirror on the dresser. His image was pale in the moonlight. Who am I? He asked the mirror. The mirror stared back. It did not answer. It only knew it was not looking at a murderer. Robert left the room and the house. Once outside, the tension inside him released. His stomach wrenched, he bent over, bile came up his throat, filled his sinuses, and burned the top of his brain. His eyes watered, he heaved, then heaved again, and again. Nothing came out. He hadn't eaten for 2 days, not since, an eternity ago, Kelly played the burglar game and then accused him of rape. Robert stood up, wiped the drool from his mouth, and fled, bumbling and stumbling down the path into his car. Kelly had instructed him how to get rid of the knife. Robert stopped on a bridge near the meteorite and flung it into a stream. Back at his house, hot and sweaty, he took a shower then collapsed exhausted onto his bed. He wanted to sleep, make this night go away, everything looks better in the morning. Right? That wasn't going to happen. What will Kelly think? How to explain to her he could not murder her parents, that Sam and Elaine were still alive? How to comfort her? Her life, thanks to him, was now still in danger. Kelly was right. He is a loser. Scene 3. Read him his rights. The sun burning through his bedroom window woke him. Groggily, Robert threw water on his face, rubbed the soreness from his legs, touched at the scratches on his arms from the thorns that had stuck him on his floundering flight down the hill. His right wrist was sore from when he had fallen. He did not rush. There was no need to hurry now, no need for an alibi. And he was stalling, trying to think how he would tell Kelly that Sam and Elaine were not dead. It was 10 in the morning when he left the carriage house and walked over to the mansion. There had been a plan, an integral part of the step-by-step how. Stay here and serve us food and drinks. Kelly had told him. After everyone goes upstairs, you leave and go do it. Be back here early to clean up and fix us breakfast. How early? Robert had asked. He needed concrete, specific steps. His muddled mind had been in no condition to think for itself. They'll all be sleeping late after screwing half the night, but be back here by 9 just to be safe. Fortunately, Kelly hadn't included herself in the screwing half the night part. He didn't want to think about that. Robert had the coffee made and was frying bacon when Kelly's two girlfriends came into the kitchen. Robert looked up, mourning. Kelly asked me to help fix breakfast. Do you want anything? Sure, whatever you're making. How about the guys? They left early, one of the girls said. Gone fishing, the other added. They both looked at each other, and almost in unison, laughed, I guess we didn't keep them busy enough last night. Gone fishing was fine with Robert. He didn't want to see any boyfriends. Did Travis go with them? Haven't seen him, they giggled. Maybe he's still busy with Kelly. The girls took their coffee and sat at the kitchen table. They talked as if Robert was not there, he was the hired help, just part of the furniture. Travis came down. Hey Travis, you look all worn out, one girl quipped. The other joined in. Did you have a long, hard night? Both girls giggled. Travis smirked, pointed his finger at them, and fired his pretend gun. He left, ignoring the furniture. That was okay with Robert. The jerk was not someone he was ready to deal with. A few minutes later, Kelly came down and walked over to the kitchen counter. Oh, there's my phone. I must have left it here last night.
Hey, sleepyhead, one girl said. You look exhausted.
She looked at the door Travis had just gone out.
Busy night?
More giggling.
Kelly looked at the girl.
Needed a shower.
Even more giggling.
Kelly took a cup of coffee that Robert had poured for her and then looked up at him.
So, how'd it go?
She asked as casually as if she was asking if he remembered to put cream in the coffee. She didn't wait for an answer but strolled over to the kitchen table and sat down with her girlfriends. They leaned their heads together, a gaggle of giggling girls.
Robert hoped they kept gaggling for a while.
He needed time to figure out how to tell Kelly he had failed. He had to live with that, but Kelly couldn't. With her parents alive, her life was at risk. He wondered how it might happen.
It could be simple.
A knock on the door, a man standing there, a gun. Then bang.
No, not that.
Some strange man at the door just shoots her? The police would never let that one go.
Robert sucked in his breath as if he was about to leap from a great height.
I'm the murderer. The man at the door will shoot her and make it look like I did it. Then shoot me and make it look like I killed myself.
A lover's quarrel, that's why I'm here.
There was a knock on the door.
Oh, Robert, Kelly asked, will you get that?
Robert looked through the entryway window. Two figures were standing there.
There was a knock again.
He opened the door to a man and a woman.
I'm Detective Brandt, the man said, with Cook County Sheriff's Department, this is Detective Goodwin from Walworth County in Wisconsin.
Are you Robert Duran?
Yes.
We'd like to ask you some questions.
Kelly walked up. I'm Kelly.
This is my house.
What's going on?
Goodwin looked at Kelly.
You're Kelly Heffernan?
Yes.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Have you been hurt or injured in any way?
No, I'm fine.
What's going on?
Goodwin asked questions, she didn't answer them.
Is there someplace we can talk a little more privately?
Sure, back in the dining room.
Is there anyone else in the house?
There's a couple of my girlfriends.
Goodwin turned to a uniformed police officer standing behind her.
Robert hadn't noticed him before.
Officer, would you stay with Mr. Duran while I talk with Ms. Heffernan?
It was a question that sounded like an order.
Detective Brandt, would you meet with the girlfriends?
That sounded less like an order.
Mr. Duran, would you have a seat over there until we can get back to you?
That was an order.
What's going on?
Robert asked.
I said sit down, we'll get back to you.
Robert could see into the dining room.
Detective Goodwin was sitting, facing Kelly.
He couldn't hear what was being said.
Goodwin reached out and took Kelly's hand.
After a moment, Robert saw Kelly bend over, her hands go to her face, her shoulders shake, he heard sobbing.
Robert could hear the murmur of voices from Brandt talking to the two girlfriends in the kitchen.
Sometimes one or both said something.
Robert couldn't make out what.
Then he saw Kelly, a little more collected, looking at Goodwin and nodding her head.
Kelly's girlfriends went over to her.
They hugged her and sobbed, which got Kelly crying again.
Robert heard one say, "They told us we couldn't stay too long. We'll get going and check back later."
The other turned around while leaving, "Please let me know if there is anything I can do for you."
After the girlfriends left, Detectives Goodwin and Brandt joined with the uniformed officer who had never left Robert's side.
The three circled Robert.
Goodwin was standing on Robert's right.
She seemed to be the one in charge.
He turned to her.
"Please, can you tell me what's going on?
What happened?
Where were you last night?"
Goodwin asked.
"I don't know."
Brandt stepped closer to Robert.
"You don't know where you were last night?"
"No.
I mean,
what time?"
"Let's try this again," Goodwin said. "Where were you last night?"
Robert looked toward the dining room.
Kelly was staring at him.
"I was over here for a while."
Kelly was having a party.
"I was helping fix food and stuff."
"Did you stay here all night?"
"I went home about 10.
"What did you do then?"
"Went to bed."
"Then what?"
Well, I got up about 9. Kelly had wanted me to help fix breakfast for everyone. So I came over here and started it. That's what I was doing when you got here. Did you leave your house last night? Brant asked.
No, like I told you. I was home all night.
Well, we'll need to have you come down to the station for some additional questioning.
Officer, would you handcuff Mr. Duran?
Another order.
You're handcuffing me?
Standard procedure.
Robert looked for Kelly, but the dining room was empty, for she had gone.
While he was unceremoniously let out the door, Robert turned to Goodwin.
What happened?
Sam and Elaine Gallo have been found dead.
Someone murdered them?
Officer, would you read Mr. Duran's rights?
Chapter 28. Robert accused. Pale mouse gray for the metal chairs and tabletop, the darker mouse gray for the table's frame.
Robert was being held in a detention center in Chicago, pending extradition to Wisconsin. He had refused the services of an attorney, maintaining he didn't need one since he hadn't done anything wrong. He was in a small conference room, his back to the only door. Even the walls are. Robert tried to think. Of the several color schemes he had studied in college, he liked Ridgway's the best. Instead of symbols or numbers to represent combinations of color features, hue, tone, light, shade, Ridgway used natural words to name his colors. Words for zoologists and botanists, naturalists, those in the field to describe their observations. Probably palette Quaker drab for the wall, Robert decided, although perhaps that was too dark of a color. He had spent entire nights laying on his bed studying Ridgway's book, memorizing the colors. The intriguing names, Courage Green, Gobelin Blue, Spinel Red, how did he come up with those? Although Ridgway warned of the impossibility of any coloring scheme being able to capture every nuance of color, that the colored swatch of orange, lemon, or chestnut in his color plates may not precisely match the orange, lemon, or chestnut someone was holding in their hand. Still, there was at least somewhere, one such thing that was that orange, that lemon, or that chestnut. Robert found comfort in that. Other color systems were more exacting. For his computer drawing class, they used RGB, red, green, blue. They could give each color a value from 0 to 255, 0 being the lack of that color, and 255 the most of it. The combinations as the numbers moved around produce a dazzling array of colors, 16,777,216, to be exact. All of each of the three colors, 255, make pure white. The lack of color, 0, for each, produces black. If all three values are close, they create a shade of gray. It turns out that sameness produces gray. None of Ridgway's 1,115 named colors was just named gray. But today, Robert thought, just gray seemed about right. He was wearing, he decided, a Mikado orange jumpsuit, and slippers, made of paper, near the same color. If he had tried to run, they would fall off. The slippers forced him to shuffle, even just trying to get from one place to another. The guards, social workers, attorneys, everyone from the outside wore uniforms, street clothes, coverings that protected them, shoes. In his college art classes, they would have a model stand in the center, wearing only a sheet. They would direct him or her to drop the sheet, to stand naked before the artists, armed with their brushes, palettes, and pigments, who would poke, pry, and peel away the layers, observing and capturing the model's soul. Then Robert was the observer. Now, he was the observed, exposed, and vulnerable. Only the jumpsuit covered his nakedness. The two detectives came in.
Hello, Mr. Duran.
You may remember, I'm Detective Goodwin, and this is Detective Brant. We met with you a few days ago.
Yeah.
Hi.
I remember.
We wanted to get together with you today to try to clear up a few questions we have. Is that okay with you?
Sure.
Detective Goodwin put a briefcase on the table and sat down across from Robert. Detective Brant stood behind and to Robert's left. Goodwin was wearing a dark blue blazer over a white blouse. Robert could see Brant was wearing black pants and black, polished shoes. Goodwin started,
Do you recall we advised you of your rights when we first met?
Yes.
And so you know you have the right to an attorney?
Yes.
You also know you don't have to answer any of our questions?
Yes, I know that.
I didn't do anything. I just want to get this cleared up.
Well, that's what we want too.
So, are you willing to talk to us now?
Sure.
Brandt interjected. Give us the right answers and we can let you go.
But, Goodwin looked irritatingly at Brandt, remember, anything you say can be held against you.
Okay. If at any time you want to stop this interview, it will end. Do you understand?
Yes.
Mr. Duran. Is it all right if I call you by your first name?
Yes, that's fine.
How do you like to be called?
Bob?
Robert?
I like to be called Robert.
Okay, Robert, there's just a few things Detective Brandt and I are struggling to clear up. Will you help us with that?
Sure.
Well, one of the things troubling us is that after you were brought down here, we got a search warrant for where you live.
Okay.
We found. Goodwin reached into her briefcase, here's a picture of it. A shirt, that looks like it's got quite a bit of blood on it. You see that?
Yeah.
A lot of blood.
Yes, you're right, a lot of blood.
You found that at my place?
In the trash can behind where you live.
Do you have any thoughts on how that might have gotten there?
No.
Someone must have put their shirt in there.
Well, the shirt has a name tag on it.
Your name.
It's your shirt.
Brandt leaned over, and Robert smelled astringent aftershave lotion of allspice, cinnamon, and orange like his father had used.
So, how do you explain your bloody shirt being in your dumpster?
I don't know.
Well, another thing, Goodwin continued, that has some concern here, are skin fragments we found in your shower.
That and some hair, long hair, probably from a woman's head, but also some pubic.
You checked my shower?
There was a lot of blood at the scene.
Whoever did that would have gotten blood on themselves.
So, he would want a shower to get that off.
We find even where a crime is not so physical, a theft, for instance, the person committing the crime takes a shower or does something to clean themselves off.
I guess trying to wash the sin away
makes them feel better.
Brandt thumped the back of Robert's head.
Coming clean can make you feel better.
Why don't you do that?
Robert turned his head and glanced at Brandt.
Okay, I understand where this is going.
Good cop, bad cop.
I've seen the movie. Brandt leaned closer to Robert, his mouth an inch from Robert's ear, close enough that the recording equipment in the room would not pick up anything more than growling. He put his arm on the back of Robert's chair, forcing Robert to lean forward.
That's right, and I'm the bad cop, asshole.
You're still in Chicago.
This is my place.
Brandt's arm was hard against the back of Robert's neck. He pushed Robert further forward.
You don't think I can't beat the crap out of you?
You don't think I have favors owed me here?
You don't think I can't get to you any time I want?
Goodwin jumped in.
That's enough.
This is my case, and he's my prisoner.
That's not how I do things.
Brandt stood up.
He's not your prisoner until you get him back to Wisconsin.
Till then, he's mine.
Goodwin leaned forward.
Robert, let's you and I try to clear this up.
But I didn't do anything.
Why do you assume I did it?
It could have just been a break-in.
Probably not.
Nothing was taken, nothing disturbed, except in the Gaio's bedroom.
And the security system was too good for any ordinary burglar.
Well, I understand Sam was connected.
What about the Chicago mob?
They probably could have gotten through the alarm system, but I don't think it was a professional job.
Goodwin looked at Brandt, do you have anything on that?
No one's unhappy Gallo is dead, but there's no word out in the street that the mob was involved.
Goodwin looked back at Robert.
When we last met, you told us you were home alone all night.
Robert looked down at the table.
He was rubbing his finger and thumb against each other.
Well, I was at Kel.
Can I call her Kelly?
Sure, first names are fine.
I was at Kelly's helping out with a party she was having.
Then I went to bed and stayed there until the next morning when I went back over to fix breakfast for everyone. We've talked to everyone who was there that night.
No one remembers you, Brant said.
You're a pretty forgettable guy.
Well, a couple of the girls remember you were there in the morning, Goodwin added.
Those were the two that were there when we arrived.
So, when did you leave Kelly's that night?
About 9.
And when did you go back there?
About 9 the next morning.
No.
Wait.
Maybe closer to 10.
And so, from 9 p.m. to 10 a.m. you were at your place?
Robert looked down at his right hand. His index finger and thumb were frenziedly attacking each other.
Yeah.
So, a problem we have is that someone has identified you as being near the scene of the crime around midnight.
Who was that?
Well, let's see. Goodwin took some papers out of her briefcase and shuffled through them, then found what she was looking for.
Johnston, Alfred Johnston.
Old man Johnston?
You know him?
No, but Kelly told me about him. He had it in for Sam.
You need to look at him for this.
Brant wrapped his knuckles on Robert's left hand.
Right now, we're looking at you.
You ever meet him?
Goodwin asked.
Robert pulled his hands into his lap.
No.
Can you explain how he was able to describe you to our dispatcher when he called in?
No, but don't you think it's a little strange he'd be out there at midnight?
Goodwin looked at Robert.
Generally, this is where we ask you questions, not you ask us. But I'm going to tell you what we have so far.
I'm doing that so you understand we're being honest with you.
Okay?
Okay.
But in return, I want you to be honest with us.
Okay?
Sure.
Was that a yes?
Yes.
All right.
Goodwin picked up one of the papers.
So it seems Mr. Johnston had heard noises. A car being parked in an area near his residence. He's had some vandalism, so he went out to check on it. He saw a Jeep was parked there. Then he heard someone stumbling through the underbrush, so he followed that sound up a path that leads to the Gallows house.
I understand you all refer to that as the cottage?
Yeah, I know the cottage.
Johnston waited there and then spotted someone come out of the cottage.
Johnston was nervous, so he hid in some bushes. He watched the person come down the path, probably no more than 10 feet from where he was hiding.
Johnston then heard a car start up and drive off.
He was concerned something had happened, so he called us.
He gave a description of the person he saw leaving, and that the person was possibly driving a Jeep.
Dispatch had a patrol car drive over there.
The officer even got out and walked around the place.
But nothing seemed disturbed.
Later that morning, the Gallows housekeeper called in. She had gone up early to clean.
That's when she found the bodies.
Goodwin put the paper on the table.
The housekeeper said Johnston's description of the person he saw coming out of the cottage, along with the Jeep, sounded like the house guest the Gallows had.
Goodwin looked up at Robert.
She said his name was Robert Duran.
I needed to inform Kelly her parents had been murdered, and I also needed to check you out. Illinois is out of my jurisdiction, so Detective Brant was assigned to go with me to the Gallows residence.
Brant put his foot on top of Robert's, the hard sole pressing down on the soft slipper.
So we go, and who answers the door?
Our Christmas gift.
Goodwin looked up at Brant.
She actually managed to smile.
Yeah, Christmas came early this year.
Brant continued.
We did a photo lineup with Johnston.
He picked your photo as the person he saw leaving the cottage.
Can you explain that?
Goodwin asked.
He must be mistaken.
Or lying.
You need to check him out as the murderer.
Brant twisted his foot on Robert's like he was putting out a cigarette butt.
I suppose if you were in your bed all night, he would be wrong, wouldn't he?
I suppose.
Brant moved his foot off of Robert's.
We're having the murder weapon tested.
It's going to tell us who the murderer is, Robert.
Well, we're pretty sure it's the murder weapon, Goodwin said.
We're also pretty sure it will have information on it as to who used it.
DNA, you know.
So, could that be you, Robert?
No way.
Because you were home all night?
Yes.
No.
I mean, because I didn't do it.
Brant kicked Robert's foot.
Damn,
You can't give a straight story.
Robert looked up at Brandt.
What are you talking about?
Goodwin pulled some photographs out of her briefcase.
So, here's the problem we're having.
Take a look at these.
What are they?
They're photos from the night of the murder, from tollbooth cameras, from the toll road going up into Wisconsin.
Why would you check out tollbooth cameras?
Ms. Heffernan, Kelly, mentioned you and she had gone up to the cottage this summer and took that way up.
She didn't think you knew of another way.
Kelly told you that?
She's pretty distraught at the death of her parents, as you can imagine, but she's trying to give us any information she has to clear this up.
Anyway, look at these.
See, there's a Jeep.
Registered to you, Brandt said.
Goodwin pointed to the top right of the photograph.
And it's passing through the last toll booth, entering Wisconsin at 11:05 p.m.
See the timestamp?
Yeah. Goodwin showed Robert another photo. And re-entering Illinois at 1:56 a.m.
See that?
Robert was silent.
Look at those photographs, Brandt said.
Do you see who's driving?
Brandt leaned down and rumbled in Robert's ear, I do.
Robert hung his head.
Robert, Detective Brandt and I drove that route.
Using the timestamps on the photos, we had time, from leaving that toll booth, to go to the cottage, go up the path Johnston showed us, stay in the cottage 20 minutes, then come back down the path and drive back to that toll booth.
Brandt was still in Robert's ear.
You lied when you said you were tucked in your bed all night.
You drove up there, you murdered the Gallos, and then you drove back down.
Can you explain these photos?
Goodwin asked.
Robert was concentrating on his feet.
I'm so disappointed, Robert.
I thought we had a deal.
I thought we would be honest with each other.
Robert turned his head to his right, away from his and Brandt's feet.
Goodwin continued.
Here's another thing, Robert.
Your cell phone ping has you about a mile from the cottage.
There's only one tower near there, or it could have gotten closer.
Still.
Brandt couldn't resist, your cell phone spent the night in Wisconsin.
Are you really going to sit there and tell us you didn't?
Robert scrunched back in his chair.
If I was there, I didn't kill them.
What reason would I have to do that?
Goodwin sat back.
We're working on that.
We heard Sam had pissed you off with the deal you had with him, Brandt said.
He was getting a lot of the profit from your paintings.
Kelly says you kept complaining about that.
Kelly said that?
Goodwin put her hand on her briefcase.
I think this was a crime of passion.
When we executed the search warrant on your place, we found hundreds of photos you had taken of Kelly, nude, you even tied her up for some.
She was your go-to model for the, Goodwin sneered, art you produced.
You really had a thing for her.
Brandt.
You're a damn sick, pornographer.
Robert.
She was fine with being my model.
Goodwin.
That's not what Kelly says.
She was extremely embarrassed by it all.
She said you and Gallo forced her to do it.
Brandt.
I think you were so hooked on Gallo's daughter when Gallo threatened to stop you from using her, you killed him.
Robert.
He wasn't about to stop us.
I was the photographer.
She was the model.
He made money off the photos.
He wasn't going to end that.
Where did you hear he was?
Goodwin.
Kelly said Sam was about to throw you out.
Robert?
No, we had a good understanding.
We've been doing as much background on you as we can, Goodwin said.
We were wondering why you came to Chicago in the first place.
Kelly said we should talk to a Sydney Stewart.
Yeah.
She invited me to come.
I think we hit it off.
It just didn't work out.
Well, we took her statement.
Goodwin pulled a paper out of her briefcase.
It says here. I was interviewing Bob Duran for a magazine I worked for. Duran was living and working in North Platte, Nebraska. He came on to me and made unwelcome advances. He later showed up uninvited at my place in Chicago.
A few months later, I was at a party and saw Duran.
Thank God, I don't think he noticed me. I do not want to have anything to do with him.
I'm afraid of him.
When I first spotted him at the party, I suspected he was stalking me.
Brandt looked at Goodwin.
I think it was he got caught up in a love triangle.
Robert?
What? Brant. You have a thing for Kelly while you're having an affair with her mother.
What was it?
You afraid Gallo would find out?
Robert.
How do you know about Mrs. Gallo?
Goodwin.
Did you know the place had surveillance cameras?
Robert.
Yeah, those.
Brant.
Yeah, Gallo needed to be careful. He had security systems in there.
Goodwin.
The cameras record onto tape. The tape self-erases every 10 days to save space. But any recording can be saved permanently if someone wants that. Someone wanted to save these. Here's some photos from the tape.
Brant.
There's a week's worth there. While Gallo is gone with Kelly trying to help her through some problems she's having, you're having an affair with his wife.
Goodwin.
Looks like sometimes twice a day.
Brant.
Like Mrs. Robinson.
Robert.
Mrs. who?
Brant.
The affair may explain the pubic hair, but unless you had some really interesting sex, that doesn't explain why we found pieces of her skin in your shower.
Goodwin leaned toward Robert.
What you did is understandable. You're depressed. You're down on yourself. People do dumb things when they're like that. You got caught up in some kind of love triangle. Gallo was about to take Kelly away from you. Now's the time to be honest with us. You'll feel better if you just tell us what happened.
I wasn't depressed.
Goodwin pulled a photograph out of her briefcase and put it on the desk.
Well, here's another surveillance photo.
One of you sitting in the gazebo with a gun to your head.
Brant leaned over and slid the photograph toward Robert.
Good thing you were trying to kill yourself instead of jerking off, or this would be really embarrassing.
Goodwin reached into her briefcase.
Let me show you these photos.
Of what?
The Gallos.
Robert turned his head.
Goodwin slapped the table.
Robert jerked up as if she had slapped his face.
Look at these.
One by one, Goodwin showed Robert the photos.
It's not just that the killer used a knife, it's how he did it.
Multiple stab wounds.
Aggressive, over and over.
Slashing.
Robert turned his head.
Goodwin, forcefully, look at them.
The mutilation, even of Elaine Gallo.
Look at the gouge marks on her right arm, Brant remarked.
Probably from fingernails.
It looks like she was trying to protect Gallo while he was being stabbed.
No one, the DA, the coroner, us, has ever seen anything like this, Goodwin said.
The blood-soaked comforter, the whiteness of the bodies, the faces frozen in perpetual torture.
Robert bent over, his stomach churned, a burning rose in his throat and into his mouth and nose.
He grimaced as he swallowed it down.
His eyes shut so tight he saw flesh ochre behind his eyelids.
Robert looked up.
I think I'd like to talk to a lawyer now.
Chapter 29. Not innocent.
3, 4, turn.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Robert counts.
Turn.
Smaller than his cell, where he can make 6 steps, wall to wall.
3, 4, turn.
He is being held, pending trial, in the Walworth County Jail in Wisconsin. He's in a conference room where attorneys meet privately with their clients. It's just off the pod where inmates sit, watch TV, or read, there isn't anything else to do. Meals are the most exciting part of the day. Robert is waiting to meet with his attorney, public defender, Chris Ransom.
1, 2, 3, 4, turn.
The walls are bare, no clock, no decorations, and except the one in the metal door that a guard occasionally looks through, no windows. There is a small metal table with a metal chair on each side that nearly fill the room.
Robert has to negotiate between one of the chairs and the wall.
4, turn. We don't talk about our cases, he was advised when he arrived 67 days ago. We're all waiting for trial. If I tell you about my case, the DA may offer you a deal to testify against me, or vice versa.
I'd testify against you to get a deal.
You bet. There are 8 other inmates awaiting trial, all not guilty, none innocent.
3, 4, turn.
There is a click as the door is unlocked, then the clang of the bolt sliding the door open.
Hello, Robert, I'm sorry I'm...
You're...
late.
The hearing I was in took longer than expected. I wanted to meet with you today. We need to discuss your case. I have some questions I'd like to resolve. I've already talked to you, your investigator, your psychiatrist, and I don't know who all else. What more is there to talk about? If you and your people were working on this and doing your jobs, this would have been resolved a long time ago. What's going on? The process can take a while. And this is a big case, so everyone, the police, the prosecution, my office, are covering all bases. Yeah, I know, a murder case. Two murders, one of the victims being a hoodlum from Chicago, killed in a very gruesome manner, by the accused, a pornographer. I wish you wouldn't refer to me as a pornographer. Well, that's the kindest word people around here call you. Ransom sat down and pulled out a legal pad from his briefcase. We're getting a trial date later today. It will be in about 3 months. Sit down and let's go over some of this. But I didn't do it. Why can't anyone see that? Why would I kill them? Oh, the DA is having a field day with that. You had a grudge against Gallo for making you do slave labor for him. You had a thing for Kelly, and Gallo stood in your way. You had a thing for his wife, Elaine, same problem with Gallo. You're a porno, suicidal, nutcase, the DA's not so fond of that one. That would give you a mental disease or defect defense. I'm not suicidal, and I'm not crazy. Hold that thought. That may be our fallback position. How about sitting down? Robert slumped into a chair. Robert, what we look at, the DA, the court, me, ultimately a jury if it goes to trial, is the evidence. What does the evidence tell us? Blood on the shirt, your shirt, was from both of the Gallos. The skin fragments found in your shower were Mrs. Gallo's. That's consistent with the gouges found on her right arm. The hair and pubic hair found in your shower were hers. The knife. Do you believe me? It doesn't matter. It matters to me. I can do my job whether or not I believe my client. It doesn't matter what I believe. It's all about the evidence. I asked you if you believe me. Ransom put down his legal pad and reached into his briefcase. I look at you, and I don't see a murderer. I don't see someone who could have done this. He held up photographs of the crime scene. You can't even look at these. The evidence is stacked up against you, but there are some holes. Robert had looked away when Ransom held up the photographs. Now he glanced back. Like what? For one, the murder was messy. There was a lot of blood. Even on the walls and the ceiling over the bed from the force of the knife going up and down. The police found your shirt in the trash can behind where you lived. It was covered in blood. There would have had to be blood on your pants and shoes as well. Some of that would have transferred to the seats and floor of your car. But no blood was found there. In fact, no bloody pants or shoes of yours were found at all. You either disposed of those, so the police would not find them, something you didn't do with your shirt. Or they never had blood on them to begin with. Well, okay. If we go to trial, isn't that enough to get me off? It's a start, but not enough. What we need is to get the jury thinking someone else did the murders. Someone else did do the murders. Ransom sighed, help me out here, Robert. Sam had a lot of enemies, Robert volunteered. It's no secret he was connected to the mob. And at the shop, there was always anger and complaining about him. Yes, that covers a lot of people, all possibilities. But consider what someone would need to pull it off. They would have to have known the Gallos would be at the cottage that Friday night. To set you up, they would have to get you to the cottage that same night. They would need to know the code to the alarm to get in. Robert started to talk, but Ransom held up his hand. Before the murders, they would have had to get one of your shirts, convenient it had your name tag on it, and wear it when they killed them. Then somehow, after the murders, get the shirt back to your place to plant it without you seeing them, and somehow Robert, they got your DNA on the murder weapon. Why isn't anyone looking at Johnston? I told the police about him when they first arrested me. He'd even threatened Sam at one time. Couldn't Johnston have done it and framed me?
This was some plot of his to kill Sam and have someone else take the blame.
Yeah, I know what you told the police, and you've brought him up to me before as well.
But Johnston would have the same problems I just mentioned, arrange for you and the Gaios to be at the cottage that same night, his gaining access to the cottage and your shirt.
Robert got up and started pacing.
Johnston's a bad guy. He abused Kelly for years. Johnston is one of the DA's star witnesses. He puts you at the cottage at the time the murders were committed. You told the police you hadn't even left your place that night. Then they got those photos from the toll booths, and the location of your cell phone within a mile of the cottage. That bolsters Johnston's credibility and destroys yours. When they first came to the house to tell Kelly about her parents, they asked where I had been. I panicked, or something. Anyway, I wasn't thinking straight and blurted out I was at my place all night. Then later, when they were questioning me at the detention center, I was scared. I didn't want them to think I had lied, so I kept to what I had told them. Well, they probably never would have thought to look for those toll booth photos if Kelly hadn't clued them to the route you took. The way you took was over a good hour and a half longer than just driving straight up. Well, I didn't know any other way. Except for the way Kelly showed you.
Yeah. The point is, you lied about leaving your house. They got you driving into Wisconsin and then back out within times consistent with when the murders were committed.
Yeah, I know, dumb. Ransom chuckled. Felony dumb is what the DA calls it. He was laughing. How can there be so much crime with such dumb criminals running around? Robert shoved the chair he had been maneuvering around during his pacing. So you and your DA buddy get your laughs at my expense. This is my life you're laughing at. I'm not dumb, and I'm not a criminal. You're right, and I'm sorry. There's a lot of gallows humor that goes around in criminal law. And for the record, the DA is not my buddy. Now, Robert, how about sitting down? Robert sat and leaned across the table. Okay, if not Johnston, how about Janie? I realize I'm grasping here. Kelly. Well, Kelly liked to tell me stories. From what she told me about Janie, I'd say Janie was capable of about anything. Have you talked to Janie? You've told me about Janie before, and Kelly's and her relationship, pretty strange. That's just what I heard from Kelly. What else can you tell me about Janie?
Not much. I never met her.
No, no one has.
Do you know her last name?
No.
Where she lives?
No, really nothing. We haven't been able to find her, and we have a very good investigator. He's interviewed people in the town, looked through all the records, motor vehicle, driver's licenses, there's no reference of her anywhere. No one has ever heard of her. You need to ask Kelly about her. Kelly will know how to get a hold of her. Kelly says she never heard of Janie. She feels you made up stories about Janie to satisfy some erotic fantasy of yours. There is no Janie. Robert put his head in his hands, rubbing his temples.
Yeah, I didn't think there was a real Janie, but Kelly made her up, not me.
Robert thought for a moment.
Okay, then.
How about Travis? Kelly invited him to spend the night with her. He would have known the Gaios were at the cottage. Travis could have stolen one of my shirts. He's probably been up to the cottage a few times. He could have gotten the code for the alarm. And how did he get you to go up to the cottage?
Robert sat looking down, his arms crossed.
Ransom continued. I've interviewed Travis. Boy, he's a jerk, isn't he? He claims to have spent that night with Kelly setting some new sexual endurance records. So Kelly's his alibi. And he's hers. Which gets me to what I wanted to talk to you about. You keep skipping around trying to finger everyone, except the obvious one. There's no evidence she's involved. Kelly's not a named suspect, so her records are pretty close to us right now. We do know she was in a mental health institution twice, both times for attempted suicide. We also found an old police report from when she was 6 years old. A drunk was waiting for the L in Chicago. He saw two girls arguing. The younger one pushed the other into the front of a train. The one who did the pushing was Kelly. The only evidence was the word of a drunk, Kelly was a minor, and the other girl was poor and black.
The report didn't even list her name. There was no follow-up.
What does that have to do with anything now?
Kelly is not who you think, not what you want her to be. She planned the murders and set you up to take the hit.
You say you like to follow the evidence.
There's no evidence of that.
The evidence of that is what's in your head, what you're not telling me.
You're being awfully protective of her.
No one else ever has.
Let's go over that night again.
Tell me, from your point of view, what happened?
Robert sat back in his chair.
I've been through this several times with you and your investigator.
I know.
But go through it again.
Start with the day of the murders.
Robert sighed and leaned forward.
Kelly had told me about the insurance policy the Gallos had on her life. She was crying and scared they were going to kill her for the money. She had her friends over that night for a party. She hoped their being with her would deter whoever Sam sent after her. She also invited me to be with her to help protect her. I went over to the house. After everyone split up and went off with their boyfriends, they left me alone. I thought, I can protect her now, but not every day. Sometimes Sam will get her. But if he was dead, the problem would go away. So, I drove up to the cottage.
The way Kelly showed you.
That's just the way we went this summer.
How did you know how to disarm the alarm?
Robert shrugged.
It's how we got in.
Did Kelly show you the combination?
You know, I think I just was watching her do it.
It's easy to remember.
Robert snorted.
The cops thought Sam's system was so sophisticated.
You just cross your heart.
Where'd you get the knife?
Robert leaned forward.
Everything we talk about is private, right?
Robert, mine is one of the two jobs in the world where it's essential to keep your mouth shut.
What's the other one?
Toilet bowl cleaner.
Robert sat back in his chair.
Shit, you're still making jokes at my expense.
When are you going to take this seriously?
Sorry, but I get asked that a lot.
Listen, we've covered this.
What you tell me is confidential.
It doesn't go outside this room without your permission.
Robert looked down at his right hand, his thumb and forefinger were twirling around each other.
When Kelly and I were there this summer, she had me cut limes so we could make limeade.
So, she showed you where the knives were kept?
Yeah, I guess so.
Did she tell you which knife to use?
I don't remember.
What happened to the knife after you cut the limes?
I don't know.
After we had the limeade, Kelly showed me around the place.
I suppose at some time the housekeeper or someone washed it and put it back in the drawer.
Is that the knife you got the night of the murders?
I don't know.
That night I couldn't see into the drawer, so I felt around.
The knives kept clattering.
I was afraid it would wake someone up.
I finally just picked one.
What happened to that knife?
I've told you this already.
After I left the cottage and was driving away, I realized I still had it and threw it out the window.
They found the knife that was the murder weapon on the floor next to the gallows bed.
It had your DNA on it.
You would have had to have handled it.
Could that be the knife Kelly had you used to cut the limes?
That it was never washed?
That it was saved for later, for the murder?
You think Kelly had me handle a knife she planned to be used months later in a murder?
Yeah.
Pretty Machiavellian.
Robert nodded, then got up and paced.
He saw a guard looking through the window.
I'm going nuts in here.
They keep me in solitary confinement except for meals.
I get to go to the dining room, but there's always a guard standing near me.
I get out for 1 hour every other day for recreation in the cage, and there's a guard standing there.
If I hadn't insisted on attorney-client confidentiality, Ransom advised, a guard would be standing in this room now.
They act like I'm an axe murderer.
It wasn't an axe.
It was a knife.
What do you expect?
Robert threw his arms up.
You too?
I thought you believed in me.
Robert, how about sitting down?
Robert stalked toward the door.
I want out of here.
We need to work through this.
Now please sit down, or they'll put a straitjacket on you.
Robert stood glaring at Ransom.
Robert, you and I are the only two people who think you didn't do it.
Now take a couple of deep breaths and please sit down.
Robert dropped into the chair.
I guess I never asked you, you're standing over their bed,
a knife in your hand. You had gone up there to kill them. Why didn't you? Robert thought, looking for the answer in the back of his head. How to enunciate what he felt that night? I was looking down at them. I brought the knife up. Be angry, be angry. I was trying to get myself over the top to be able to do it. Hate. 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 I hate him. But I couldn't do it. I was numb. No emotions at all. Isn't that crazy? Earlier, climbing the hill, entering the cottage, approaching their bed, I was so scared I almost threw up, did afterward. But here I was about to do the most horrible thing imaginable, and I felt nothing. That didn't seem right. There should be some feeling with that sort of thing. Elaine's arm fell over Sam's chest. I thought, oh God, I waited too long, she's woken up. Her hand patted him a couple of times. She was still asleep. It was some kind of simple, natural thing for her, some assurance he was there. I think Sam turned toward her. Despite who they were, despite their problems, at that moment they were like me. Just people trying to get through this life the best they could. So, I left. Ransom looked at Robert. You're basically a good guy. None of this was your doing. Without Kelly influencing you, you wouldn't have even been in the cottage, and without her being there egging you on, you couldn't do it. Tell me about Kelly. It was all my doing. It was my plan to save Kelly from her parents. Kelly had nothing to do with it? That's right. Kelly had nothing to do with it. I have a weakness, Robert. I tend to see the best in people. Strange, given the business I'm in. Even my clients who, you can imagine, have issues, even there I find something positive. I've been accused of being naive. I've been told I was born at night. I guess I was. Ransom leaned forward. But Robert, it wasn't last night. You're holding back on me. I can't help you if you don't tell me the truth. What do you think happened? Ransom nodded. We've been following the evidence like an investigator, methodically working through it, beginning to end, until we get to a conclusion. That way leads to you as the murderer. An attorney starts with the conclusion he wants and works back, looking for the evidence that will support his conclusion. Let's start with Kelly's the mastermind. The murders were so brutal. Kelly couldn't have done it. I'm not saying she did it, that she actually committed the murders. The savagery of it. The mutilation, then. Ransom inhaled and paused as he looked at one of the photos of the crime scene, then posing them like that. No. No one, not even me, believes Kelly was capable of anything so gruesome. Kelly's plan was that you kill them. But she didn't trust she had that much control over you. So she got someone else. If you did it, then fine. If you didn't, no matter, the evidence pointing to you was all over the place, she could have them killed with impunity and get away with it. You'd make a great fiction writer. Yeah. Opposing counsel sometimes accuse me of that. Ransom leaned forward. Robert, think about this. Kelly got someone to go to the cottage and wait for you. They watched you come into the house, get the knife, go to the bedroom, waiting to see what you would do. You couldn't do it, so after you left, they committed the most brutal crimes imaginable. If I told you she talked to me about killing them, it would be because of the insurance policy. She was afraid for her life. Wouldn't that help her with the DA? They could understand that. It wasn't for any insurance policy. There was one found. The Gaius had insured Kelly for $10,000, enough to bury her, not enough to kill her. For 67 days, Robert had mulled over his situation. That's all there was to do in jail, running through the scenarios, the ones he tried out on Ransom, speculating on who may have committed the murders, and the ones he did not tell Ransom, about Kelly, what she did to him, how he ended up in jail on trial for murder. He always came to the same conclusion about Kelly. She had put him here all right. Robert stood and started pacing. Let's say she did convince me to go up to the cottage to kill them. That still doesn't prove I didn't. No, but it starts to rot what they see as an open and shut case. Let's shake the apple tree and see what falls out. With Kelly as the mastermind,
the other possible players may fit in. I've interviewed Kelly.
Who did you send? A disgruntled associate of Sam's? Travis?
I know, I was grasping there.
Somehow, was she and Johnston in cahoots?
I asked her.
Of course, she maintained she had nothing to do with any of it, so there was no one she sent.
Ransom scratched some notes on his legal pad. He always thought better when he did that. None of this is a slam dunk for us, but here's the rundown.
He held up his pad so Robert could read along with him.
Options, DA or jury.
1. Kelly masterminded plot. We have evidence of a named accomplice who committed the murders. Robert turned state's witness, maybe pleads to a minor trespass, minimum jail time.
2.
Kelly masterminded plot, not sufficient evidence of accomplice, enough doubt that Robert killed, but still participated, showed up. Robert guilty of conspiracy, attempt, does 5 to 10 years.
3.
Kelly masterminded plot, Robert under Kelly's influence and control killed Gaios. Robert guilty of second-degree intentional homicide, less than life, chance for parole.
4.
Kelly not involved in plot, Robert killed.
Ransom put his pad down and looked at Robert.
If we go to trial now, you will be convicted. Wisconsin has no death penalty. We were one of the first states to abolish it. So that's not on the table. But life is.
Once convicted, you will be sentenced to life without a chance for parole.
Robert pointed at the legal pad.
I don't like any of those choices.
You need to do better.
Get me off without involving Kelly.
I'm a pretty good attorney. Sometimes my clients even call me a magician. I can pull rabbits out of hats.
But Robert, in your case, you got only one rabbit, and that's Kelly.
You need to take your magic act and disappear.
Let me go to the DA with the information about Kelly.
How about keeping your mouth shut like a toilet bowl cleaner?
Ransom's face flushed.
You're right. I can't use what you tell me without your permission.
But I sure as hell can cross-examine Kelly at trial.
Maybe I can bring out enough to get at least one juror to think Kelly may have been a part of it, or, at least, to have a reasonable doubt about you.
What if I don't go to trial?
What if I just plead guilty?
You don't need me for that.
Robert stopped pacing and turned to face Ransom.
You're my attorney.
Yes, and I'll give you a defense to the best of my ability.
That means I go after Kelly.
You have to do what I want.
Ransom stood and faced Robert.
I'm not your whore.
We go to trial, and I'm dragging Kelly all over the coals.
You're my attorney, and I say you don't.
Ransom leaned over the table toward Robert.
Yes, I am an attorney, and that means you will get the best defense I can give you whether you want it or not.
Robert leaned over the table toward Ransom.
Then you're fired.
Ransom stepped back, propped himself against the wall, and crossed his arms.
Look, you apparently have a thing for her.
Hell, you obviously think you love her.
I do love her.
And you obviously think she loves you.
Robert stepped back, his mouth opened, but no words came out.
Robert, sometimes the object of our love is not deserving of it.
She doesn't love you.
Robert didn't respond.
You know that, don't you?
You know she doesn't love you.
Robert took a breath.
Yes.
A judge's gavel bangs.
And you still want to sacrifice your freedom for her?
A man sins, a man pays.
The gavel banged again.
Robert, you can stop doing penance.
Give them Kelly.
No.
The gavel banged a third time.
Guilty.